Gather round, take a seat, relax. It's the Verbringen with Rabbi Levi Avtzon, right here on 101.9 High FM.
This is 101.9 High FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtzon, and it is a privilege and an honor to be here with you on this Tuesday, the 13th day of the month of Iyar, and the 21st day of May. I hope you're healthy, and I hope that this show finds you in a decent space, right? As decent as we could make our lives in complicated times. But I want to actually start with unpacking a chag, a little holiday that's happening tonight and tomorrow, which is not so known. And then maybe we can unpack, if we have time in the show, unpack another chag, which is happening Saturday night and Sunday. So let's start with what's happening tonight and tomorrow and its powerful lessons and how we really have so much to gain by tapping into the energy of this time. See, the calendar is a very powerful thing. Different days have different energies. So when someone's in a Passover, a Pesach energy, that's a very different space than Sukkot or Rosh Hashanah. And for those of us who prepare ourselves and are able to show up emotionally into these events, we can feel a different energy. There's a different space. Purim, Hanukkah, each holiday has an energy, a zone. And tonight, although it's not one of the mega chags, there's no very few customs to this day and very unknown, its message is one of the most powerful of any holiday. So let's first do some background, just to understand what this chag's about, and then we can unpack some of its lessons throughout the show. Obviously, as always, accompanied by some music, because it's the Omer time now, we've chosen some beautiful a cappella music. A lot of the music that I put on my shows are quite new. So these are all, most of the songs I'm going to share with you today are pretty recent and just interesting innovations on music based on a cappella. Some of the music don't even sound a cappella, but I could tell you that no instruments were used in any of the sounds of these songs. So what's happening tonight? Okay, build up. It's a holiday called Pesach Sheni. If you look at your calendar, it will say Pesach Sheni, the second Pesach. But what does that mean? So let's go into the Torah, into the fourth book, the book of Bamidbar, the book of Numbers, the third Parsha, Bahalotcha. And over there we read a story. So we all know that the first Passover, the first Pesach that was ever celebrated was the Jewish people in Egypt. They celebrated a Pesach Seder while sitting in Egypt, and that was on a Wednesday, Wednesday night, yes, Wednesday night they had a Passover Seder, and then the next day, Thursday, the 15th of Nisan, at midday, they left Egypt and traveled into the desert. 7 weeks later, they received the Torah at Sinai, and then they start traveling or meandering around the desert. Not meandering because God was guiding them, but there was like back and forth for 40 years. We were traveling in various different directions, really going nowhere other than, in other words, in terms of geography, back and forth, up and down, north and south, east and west. Eventually, after 40 years, when God decided our time was to enter the land, we entered. Fine. But here we're still at the beginning. We're traveling around, etc., from Sinai. And it comes a year after the Exodus. It's year one, 365 days later. And it's time to celebrate Pesach. The first Pesach truly as free, because as mentioned, the first Pesach was celebrated just before they became free, the first Seder. And by this stage, various laws were put into place. The Jewish people were taught about the laws of Pesach. And in those days, in biblical times and even post-biblical times and temple times, a big part of the Pesach experience, the Passover experience, what was called the Paschal Lamb, the Carbon Pesach. And the Carbon Pesach was a a lamb, literally, which was sacrificed. In those days, they would go bring it to the temple. Later on, when they had a temple, they would bring it to the temple, sacrifice it there, and then bring it home and roast this lamb, and then eat parts of the lamb at the Seder. The lamb had to be consumed, etc. Often there would be quite a few families coming together to eat the lamb. And when they would make the sandwich, the korech sandwich that these days we make with bitter herbs and matzah, they would add a piece of meat, which I'm sure made it absolutely delicious. And the biggest mitzvah of Pesach at the time was the Paschal lamb. It was a huge mission, lots and lots of laws, very intrinsic about how to go about it. It's all discussed in the Talmud, in the Tractate, the Pesachim, etc. Now, one of the laws about this lamb is that in order to sacrifice, in order to be able to bring it to the temple and sacrifice it, one had to be pure, ritually pure. Practically, that meant if somebody had touched a corpse, carried bones, etc., they were ritually impure. And it takes 7 days to clear yourself from that kind of impurity. So if you happen to have a funeral within a few days before Pesach, you were not able to sacrifice it. Now, what happened was there was a group of people that were ritually impure. Some opinions is they were carrying carrying the bones of Joseph back to Israel. Joseph had commanded the Jewish people that when they leave Egypt, they should bury him. And he's buried till today. He's buried in Shechem, in Nablus. And unfortunately, it's not under Israel's control. So it's quite a mission to get there. Only a few times a year do they arrange for Jewish people to visit Joseph's tomb. He's buried in Israel in Shechem. So there were a bunch of Jews that were impure because they were carrying his corpse, his body. And they come to Moshe and they say, hey, Pesach's coming up. And we lost out. We're losing out. Lama nigara. Why must we lose out from sacrificing the Paschal lamb? We want to be part of it. And Moshe didn't have an answer. It's a good question. Why should they lose out? So he cries out to Hashem and he says, give me guidance. What should I tell them? And Hashem says, they spoke well. Good point. I'm going to give them an opportunity for a second chance. Every year, 1 month after after the 14th of Nisan, because they would sacrifice the lamb on the day before Passover. In other words, let's say Passover starts Wednesday night, so they would sacrifice it on Wednesday. So a month later, to the Hebrew date, the 14th, they will be able to sacrifice this thing, and then later that night they could have a full-on Pesach. It's not a full-on Pesach because they could still have chametz at home. It was a very different Pesach experience, but they could still celebrate the Seder and have the Paschal lamb, which is the most important part. Now, obviously, for the last many years, about 2,000 years, we don't sacrifice the Paschal lamb. We don't have the temple. So in many ways, the body of this holiday, in other words, the physical manifestation of this holiday, the practicality is not there. These days, it's commemorated by many simply by eating matzah on the day. And at services in Shul, we don't say Tachanun, the confessional prayer, because it's a chag. But other than that, there's no practical manifestation. However, the message of this day is timeless. And that's what I want to explore throughout the show, at least for the first part of the show, is the message. Because what is the message in short? And then we can unpack it. The message is, here were a bunch of guys that were told they cannot sacrifice the Paschal lamb. Now, they could have accepted it, but they didn't. They were heartbroken by it. So they come to Moshe and say, Lama nigara, why should we lose out? And Moshe calls out to God, and God says, you know what, they're right. And he institutes another mitzvah. There's a whole new mitzvah that till then didn't exist, and that's the mitzvah of the second Passover. Obviously, Hashem knew what's going to happen, but Hashem waited to share this mitzvah until it was asked for. Until they said, give me another chance. Until they asked for another chance, the chance wasn't given. And that's really the message of Pesach Sheni, second chances. That if a person wants and a person reaches out to their Father in heaven and asks for a second chances are available. And the question we have to ask ourselves is, do we ask for second chances? Do we believe in second chances?
This is the Fabringen with Rabbi Levi Avtzon on 101.9 High FM.
My name is Rabbi Levi Avtzon of Linksfield Shul, and we are talking today about second chances. In the first part of the show, the first segment, we gave the history and the context of this holiday that starts tonight called Pesach Sheni. And now let's unpack second chances by asking a simple question. Do you believe in second chances? Now, your gut response will be, of course I do. Really? Do you? Not only second chances, do we believe in fourth chances or tenth chances? You think about it, every year we show up on Yom Kippur. I know we're quite a few months away from Yom Kippur, but we show up on Yom Kippur and we ask God to forgive us and a clean slate. And we're told that each year he does that, at least for sins between us and him, sins between us and our fellow human being, that's for us to fix up. But in terms of sins that we've done against God, God forgives. He knows who we are. Maybe he even knows that we'll fail again, but he forgives. But how often are we forgiving of people? Often we'll burn a friendship. We will get hurt by somebody that we love dearly. How many stories have I been told of parents and children who become alienated because of one event, one misunderstanding, no second chances? 30, 40, 50 years they got along, and then one misunderstanding, which is unforgivable. I can think of very few things in life other than intentional murder or, you know, rape. I can think of very few things in life that are unforgivable. And yet people will not show up to their own parents' funeral for something in their mind that's unforgivable. So I have a simple question to ask. Do we believe in second chances? Or do we cut people off so easily? Do we believe in people is really the question. Do we believe in redemption? Do we believe that people are able to redeem themselves? Do we believe that we are able to redeem ourselves? I've said it before on this show that often people ask me, how could you believe in God? And the answer that I give is, believing in God is not so hard. I don't believe in God only based on faith. I think logic, if somebody goes and explores things from an open mind, even from a scientific mind, they'll realize there are more holes with atheism than faith in God. I don't struggle with faith in God. That's not my issue. I sometimes struggle with how could a good God do things that seem horrible? And I don't think I'll ever have a great answer for that. And I'm not sure that I need to have a great answer with that. I could live with that contradiction, even if at times it's painful. Much harder for me than believing in God is believing in people. That's the greatest faith in the world, to believe in people. And I heard a story recently that in 1967, at that stage, Jewish outreach to, you know, between the more observant and the less observant wasn't really so popular. And there was a lot of judgment from both sides against each other. And at that stage, the Lubavitcher Rebbe opened the campaign of putting on tefillin. I'm sure if you're a Jewish man, you've been approached at some stage in your life multiple times, if perhaps, excuse me, sir, are you Jewish? Would you like to put on tefillin? But in 1967 was the beginning of that campaign around the Six-Day War. And the story is told about Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, one of the great sages of Jerusalem and a really, really pious individual, who not too long after, in 1967, when they redeemed the Israeli army, gave us back the Western Wall, which for the 20 years before that was being kept by Jordan. And we had no access to from 1948 to 1967. No Jews were allowed to go there. And finally, we were able to go back to the Western Wall. And a bunch of guys opened a tefillin stand. Until today, if you ever go to the Kotel, you'll see the tefillin stand. It's on the left. As you walk down the huge plaza, it's hard to miss. And every day, hundreds, if not thousands, of Jews put on tefillin there. It's by far the most active tefillin stand in the world. And a bunch of guys, a much more primitive stand in 1967. It was just a table with a bunch of pairs of tefillin. And as he's walking down the Kotel, he sees this, and he stops and he reflects. And the students are turning to him and say, Rabbi Auerbach, do you want to go to the Kotel? And he's like, he's just looking at a bunch of religious Jews putting on tefillin with other Jews. And he said, and he's after a while of reflecting, he says, I've known many great people who believe in God. But looking at these guys putting on tefillin, and I think about, here are people and their leader who believe in people. These guys believe in people. And I thought that was such a powerful observation, to believe in people. Today we take it for granted. Everyone does outreach. Everyone, there's a lot more understanding between communities. There's a lot way to go. I mean, especially in our Holy Land of Israel, we often see a lot of friction between the various communities. But we've come a long way in that department. But still, do we believe in people? Is a real question that we have to ask ourselves. Do I believe in people's chance to redeem? Do I believe in myself? Do I believe that even if I had a rough start to the beginning of my life, I can redeem it and be better? You know, today we are more aware than anyone in history. We are aware of how messed up we are, right? Every one of us knows about every trauma we've been through. We know about which teacher was dysfunctional. We know about all that our parents did wrong. Chances are, if you ask your grandparents what their parents did wrong, they maybe knew, they maybe didn't know, but it wasn't front and center. Today, thanks to living in therapy world, and I have nothing against therapy, but one of the side products is that we're all very, very aware of how messed up we are. And we are aware that if we didn't have attachment as young kids, and if we didn't have love, and we didn't have unconditional love, and if our teachers didn't believe in us, and if this, and if that, then we were stunted, we were held back, if we went through a traumatic incident, we're traumatized, etc. Now, oh, it's important to be aware, but the question is, once you're aware of that, do you define yourself by that? And the problem is, many of us are defining ourselves by our events. We're defining ourselves by our worst moment. The trauma I went through is the most defining event of my life. But is that true? Does trauma have to be the most defining event of your life? It can be, but does it need to be? And if it isn't, must I put it front and center? Or can I reframe myself into making other events of my life the most important event of my life? Believing in second chances means that there's nothing that happened yesterday that has to determine my today. It might have some impact, but it doesn't have to determine my today. I am always able to redefine myself today based on today. Yesterday has influence on today, but it is not the determiner of today. My past and everything that led to this very moment is a fact of life, and it definitely has impact, but it is not the determining factor in the choices I will make today. I have 100% agency on the choices I make today and the future I build myself with God's help, obviously. But whatever is within my control, I believe in free choice. If I stop believing in free choice, if I believe that everything that happens to me or my biology or my race or the teachers and the parents I had are literally impacting every decision of mine and I'm just a robot reacting to them, then I don't believe in free choice. I definitely don't believe in second chances. And I don't really believe in the point of living. Because if I live in this world and I'm not able to make choices, I have no agency on myself, then what am I? Am I just being remote controlled? What a miserable life is that? And yet so many people today believe that we're out of control, that I cannot control my destiny, that my anxieties, my depression, my traumas, my anger, my frustrations, my lack of education, my damaged parents, the divorce, et cetera, they are all the determining factors of my life. What a horrible idea, and what a damaging idea, and an idea that so many people who became heroes in their lifetime, they were never told that. In other words, so many of the people who thrive in their lives are the people that were never told they have a reason to be a victim. And when you're not told that you're legitimate to be a victim, so you don't become a victim. But when you're encouraged and you're always told, no, you're so damaged, you've been through so much, you're really, really justifying your anger, then you won't get anywhere. So much of what's going on in so-called elite campuses in the last 7 months, we were all watching with absolute shock. some of us less shocked than others, but many people shocked that elite universities that cost $100,000 a year to send your kid to, and literally people work their whole life to get to, are just a joke. A bunch of entitled kids, a bunch of brats walking around claiming they're victims and seeing the world in some binary definition where the world is made up of victors and victims. A bunch of naive people who were never taught this basic skill that there are no victims. You define yourself whichever way you want. You know, it was a mad moment yesterday in the UN when the whole UN Council stood up to honor Raisi from Iran. Forget about what he does to the Jewish people. Forget about what all that stuff. He's literally known as the Butcher of Tehran. He's estimated to have ordered the killings of up to 30,000 Iranians. And there are a bunch of fools in the UN standing up to honor him. And you ask yourself, like, what is with people? How is it that the West, the United States, Britain, Israel, they're the bad guys in this world, and Iran, China, Russia, South and North Korea, Cuba, Venezuela, they're the good guys, right? And Hamas, of course, and the Palestinians, they're all the good guys. And that's all based on this victor-victim definition, where if you're strong and successful, you're bad. If you're persecuted and terrible, you're weak. But maybe you're weak because you made yourself weak. No, you're weak because of colonialism. Oh, the straight white male who literally destroyed your life. That's the whole reason. The world we're living in is the antithesis of the message that we're trying to explore today, this idea of second chances. It's everything but second chances. No, if you were born a victim, if you were born to a certain race, if you were born to a certain nationality, if you're born to a certain religion, then by definition, you're a victim. And if you're born to the other, you're by definition the oppressor and the colonializer. That is the antithesis of the basic value of free choice, the basic value that I could get to redefine myself, and nothing about the way I was born is determiner of my future. I am, with God's help, 100% in control of what I make of myself. That was the idea that allowed Holocaust victims to thrive in their life later on, and the idea that allowed people like Nelson Mandela and many others to redefine themselves, not based on circumstances. And yet we live in a world today that's all about, you don't have a chance, man. You were born to this, and this is who you are. You're Jewish, you're Israeli, you're an oppressor. Oh, I don't care about any of this story. No, you're an oppressor. You're Palestinian, you're Hamas, you're a victim. Oh, of course you're a victim. Such a binary, pathetic, silly, ridiculous, and anti-intellectual and anti-moral perspective. And that's why the message of Pesach Sheni, the message of Second Passover, the idea of you can always redefine yourself, there's always a second chance, this message is timeless, truly timeless. This is 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Rabbi Levi Avtson of Linksfield Shul.
This is the Fabringen with Rabbi Levi Avtson on 101.9 Chai FM.
So this is 101.9 Chai FM. You were just listening to Birchat Torech, the blessing of the guest. It's a beautiful song by Ohad. And in the last few minutes of the show, we've been exploring the idea of second chances, the idea of being able to redefine themselves. And that kind of leads into the other chag I said I'll hopefully have some time to explore in this show. And although there's more to talk about Pesach Sheni, I want to talk about the other chag. Earlier I read an announcement about an upcoming parade on Sunday about Lag BaOmer. And in short, Lag BaOmer commemorates the passing of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, the great sage. It has other commemorations as well. Many people know it as the day they could shave in the Omer, the only day in the Omer you could have weddings. But it's much more than that. It's a holiday that celebrates light and life and pride. And it's become a day of parades and celebration and going into the streets and celebrating who we are. And that connects very much into the theme that we were talking about, second chances. I think a lot of us in the last 8 months have become afraid. And I'm not here to justify the fear or criticize the fear. I'm just here to state the fact that many people are afraid. And some people are making the choice based on that fear to cower, to just put our head in the hands and and not be proud of who we are, and maybe even to second guess ourselves. If so many people hate us, if so many people criticize Israel, so many so-called smart people, maybe even people we respected till now, maybe they're right. Maybe they're right. And we lose that moral clarity that every one of us innately knows, and that is that it's our land, and that the Israeli army is the most moral army. And that if all the enemies surrounding Israel would put their guns down today, there would be peace. But if Israel put down their guns, they would be destroyed. And the only reason there's lack of peace in the Middle East, there's only one reason, is the inability of Israel's neighbors to accept the Jewish homeland. If Hamas tomorrow declared they're at peace with the fact that Israel has a homeland, there would be peace tomorrow. So too with the PLO and Fatah, so too with Lebanon, so too with Hezbollah, so too with Syria, so too with Egypt and Jordan and everyone around. It's just simply accept the fact that the Jewish people have a homeland and stop trying to destroy it. That's literally the whole issue of the Middle East. Everyone tries to make it so complicated. Partition plan, settlements, etc. All that stuff can be sorted. The fundamental issue is the inability of accepting the Jewish homeland. And as much as you know, our government here talks about two-state solution, no, they don't. If they believe in the two-state solution, how could they support Hamas that believes in the one-state solution from the river to the sea? You don't believe in the two-state solution. Who are you lying to? At least be honest. At least an anti-Semite who's honest, you know where they're standing. A two-state solution person can never support Hamas because they don't believe in it. But the point is, so many of us are losing our confidence and our clarity. And that's why this message of Lag BaOmer, to go out and celebrate our Jewish pride, celebrate who we are with no shame. We have nothing to be embarrassed of, friends. Everyone uses that cliche, the right side of history, long side of history. We're on the right side of God. Hashem Imanu, God's with us. Hashem Yilachem Lachem, God can fight for us. And we just have to show up and be proud of who we are, to stop doubting ourselves, to stop seeing ourselves through the eyes of others. You know, a four-year-old in school, or a 10-year-old, or a teenager, they often see themselves based on how everyone else perceives them. Oh, if my friends like me and think I'm cool, then I'm cool. If they don't, then I'm obviously not cool. Oyvei Zmir. But as you grow older, and hopefully you develop a bit of self-esteem and a self-awareness, you stop caring that much what people think about you. And as long as you know that you're living your truth and the truth, and you're living based on who God designed you to be, you're at peace with yourself, whether you're popular or not. And it's so true with us. When we develop our own self-esteem as Jews and as people of good faith and people of moral clarity, then whether there's a billion people telling us we're wrong or there's one, it's irrelevant. Right? Einstein famously said that there was a book written by 100 scientists claiming that his general theory of relativity is wrong. And he said, if I was wrong, then one would be enough. The fact that there's 100 people, 100 scientists claiming I'm wrong doesn't make any difference. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. If I'm right, I'm right. And that's the truth. Even if every nation in the world is standing up to honor Ibrahim Raisi, the mass murderer of Tehran, and you start saying, one second, so am I the crazy one or they're all crazy? Maybe that's not the relevant question. Who cares? There's right and there's wrong. And everyone could be on the wrong side. Just watch what happened in World War II. Not one, even though the Allies didn't bomb the trains to Auschwitz, just because nobody bombed the train in Auschwitz and nobody tried to save the Jews, does that make them right? No, today we know 80 years later that they were all wrong. Everyone doing something doesn't make it right. It's either right or it's wrong. There's the moral and right, decent, honorable thing to do, and it's often not the popular thing. So we don't have to look at the world and wait for their affirmation and wait for the world to agree with us and wait for the world to tell us, oh, you can't go into Rafah, you can't go into Rafah, you can try to win the war against Hamas or not. The world agrees with us, Mazel Tov, they don't. But the world that stood silent as Jews were being gassed in the gas chambers up to 15,000 people a day, they're going to tell me what's right and wrong to protect Jewish life? Oh, really? I should take you seriously. How dare you? But more importantly, I don't care. It's right. And moral right is right, decent and honorable, even if there's five people in the world doing it. Our sages tell us that the first Hebrew, the first Jew, Abraham, Avram Avinu, Echad Aya Avram, he was one man. And he changed the world. He stood up against everybody. Nobody believed in his hypothesis, in his belief system that God cannot be seen, that there's an invisible God. This was a world that was pagan. Their God was a book or a piece of stone or a tree, the sun, the moon. And he's coming and saying, no, the monotheism, there's a God that cannot be seen, a God greater than the sun and moon and any rock. He created everything. He defies, he transcends time and space because he created time and space. So how could someone who creates time and space fit within time and space? He's beyond that. And today, many of us who believe in God can, even if we can't fully imagine that, we can grasp the concept that God can transcend time and space because we understand the concept that time and space are creations. Even science agrees with that. But they couldn't. But Avram didn't care. Echad Haya Avram, he was one. And sometimes it feels like that's the life we have to live. Echad Haya Avram. One. But if you're one person doing the honorable thing, and there's a million people standing around you doing the dishonorable thing, what's the better place to be? And we're not alone. We have many friends in this world, many honorable people, Jews and non-Jews alike, who can see the rubbish and can see clarity. On this Sunday, Lag BaOmer, let's celebrate our pride. We have nothing to be embarrassed and everything to be proud of. The fact that there's people that scream louder at us doesn't make them right. Makes them fools. Hashem Imanu, God's with us. Let's celebrate in pride. This is 101.9 Chai FM, signing off with a final beautiful piece of music by the Malchus Choir, Enkelokenu. This is 101.9 Chai FM.